a CEO who was being replaced for poor performance, he decided to go ahead and help out the new CEO. And so he said this, "I left you with four envelopes, and when you're faced with a crisis you can't handle, open the first envelope. Faced with additional crises after that, proceed to open the second, third, and fourth envelopes." And so sure enough, when the new CEO had a crisis, he opened that first envelope. And inside was a note that said, "Blame the previous CEO." He did, and wow, it worked like a charm. Well, a few months later, he had a second crisis. And so he took and opened the second envelope, and inside was a note that said, "Blame the economy." And so he did, and it worked just not quite as well. Just a few weeks later, he had a third crisis. And so he opened the third envelope, and inside it said, "Blame the workers." He did, but this time, it did not work at all. And so, discouraged, he decided to just take the fourth envelope, and so he opened up the fourth envelope, and inside it said, "Prepare for envelopes." This morning, I'd like to continue our Becoming Like Jesus series, as we've been going through the Gospels to see what Jesus did in the different circumstances of life and how we can learn from and imitate him. As we've seen, being a church member with your name in the church directory does not necessarily mean that you are a true Christian who is saved. If it does, then guys like Demas, Diotrephes, Hymenaeus, and Alexander were saved. They were church members, but we know what the Bible says about them. And you can do all that God has commanded you and still be lost, because you can be the biggest hypocrite in the world. God is not after us just following this list of do's and don'ts. You see, he's after our minds and hearts. A major part of Christianity is Christ in you, making an adjustment from the inside out. Galatians 2:20, "I have been crucified with Christ, and it is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and delivered himself up for me." I move out and Christ moves in. We're now to have the mind and heart of Christ. We are to think the way Jesus would think, say what Jesus would say, and act the way Jesus would act. We're always to ask that question, what would Jesus do? And again, you need to keep in mind that I preach about perfection, but I don't live perfection. See, preachers struggle with temptation and trying to be like Jesus the same as every other human being. And so these sermons are just as much for me. Well, today we're going to be looking at how Jesus dealt with being a leader. And you may be thinking, well, how in the world does this apply to me? I'm not aspiring to be an elder or a preacher or some great leader of God's people. I just want to be one of God's people. But it does apply to you. You see, we all at times have to be a leader. There are always someone younger who looks up to us. What did Paul say in Titus chapter 2 that the older women are to do? And what about with our children and our grandchildren and so forth? Now, before we begin, we need to define what a leader is. Because most people probably think, well, yeah, it's someone who gets to boss others around. Well, that's not what I call a leader. A leader is someone who is going somewhere, and others see it and want to follow. See, a leader is someone with passion, who really believes in what he or she is doing, and someone who's not afraid to take action. You see, others, they see this person, and they can't help but want to follow. And as it's been said, a leader takes people where they want to go. A great leader takes people where they don't necessarily want to go, but ought to be. Do we see that in Jesus? Absolutely. And so we're going to look at some things from Jesus' life on how to be a great leader. Now, there are 10 things that I found, and I believe that these principles can actually be used in any form of leading. I mean, everything from a secular boss to a parent to a cabin counselor at Little Prairie Bible Camp, which I'm going to be doing these next 2 weeks. So number one, Jesus didn't lead for the praise. Some people they feed on praise. And they get to the point where they will do and say just about anything it takes to receive it. But Jesus didn't mind doing things that would make him unpopular. So we find him healing on the Sabbath, cleansing the temple, rebuking the popular religious leaders, having contact with all of the outcasts of society, and so forth. And that kind of stuff caused a lot of people to have a problem with Jesus. Also, he didn't mind saying things that would make him unpopular. I mean, you notice he taught some pretty difficult principles to swallow. And many times he lost disciples because of them. For example, the end of John chapter 6. And we can see that he didn't let people manipulate him with praise and flattery. Take a look at Matthew 22. Then the Pharisees went and counseled together how they might trap him in what he said. And they sent their disciples to him along with the Herodians, saying, "Teacher, we know that you are truthful and teach the way of God in truth and defer to no one, for you are not partial to any. Tell us, therefore, what do you think? Is it lawful to give a poll tax to Caesar or not?" But Jesus perceived their malice and said, "Why are you testing me, you hypocrites?" Praise can often blind us. And there are times when people will try to manipulate us with praise. But like Jesus, we can't let them. Jesus led not for the praise, but because of his purpose. You see, he was here to do the will of the Father, John 6:38. And that was to seek and save the lost, to point people to God, to be the example, to show us what God designed us to be, and then to die on the cross. There is nothing wrong with giving and receiving praise, but as soon as we start doing things to receive praise from others, where that's our driving force, that is often when we are going to start compromising. A great leader doesn't lead for the praise, but for principle. Number two, Jesus brought his followers along with him. He didn't just give orders from a distance. Now, don't worry if you miss one of these 10. I'll go ahead and go over them in the end. But Mark 3:14, it says, "And he appointed 12 that they might be with him." Why did he do that? First of all, to be a model for them. As Jesus said in John 13:15 after washing their feet, "For I gave you an example that you also should do as I did to you." It was so they could see how he dealt with the circumstances of life. This is one of the best ways to learn. Okay, you can tell me what to do, but if you show me, well, I'm going to learn it faster and remember it longer. One who just barks orders, or the "do as I say, not as I do," it's not a great leader. Also, it's so he could give them special teaching, as we often see. You see, they could ask him questions. They could get extra from what the crowds could get. And then he could also use any teaching opportunities that came up. And many of them did. Now, let me just give you an example, a possible example for us. Let's say you're driving along with your kids, and you see a drunk guy staggering home from the bar. Well, why don't you take that opportunity and ask your kids, how do you think his family is going to feel when he gets home? How do you think they're going to react to that, and so forth? What the Israelites were told in Deuteronomy chapter 6 about the teachings in the law is very important. "You shall teach them diligently to your sons, and you shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up." Use those teaching opportunities. A great leader is one who brings his followers along with him. Number three, Jesus built a vision for his followers. First, he saw their potential, and he built a vision for them of who they could be. "Follow me, and I will make you fishers of men." Matthew 4:19. "You are Simon, the son of John. You shall be called Cephas," a stone. John 1:42. I've heard that the most motivational statement that one human being can say to another is, "I know that you'll do a good job." That's what Jesus was saying to them. And not only did he give them a vision of themselves, but also of what he came to accomplish, that they were going to be involved in. You see, a good example of this, I think, is all of the kingdom parables. The kingdom of God is like a mustard seed, etc. Great leaders are men and women of vision who pass that on to others. Number four, Jesus was not demoralized by the failure of his followers. Jesus was patient with them, realizing that, yeah, they were going to mess up from time to time. Their failures never caused him to give up himself or to give up on them. Now, I'm sure you can think of some examples. Now, how about Peter losing faith and sinking in Matthew 14? Jesus was so upset with him that he stepped on his head and got into the boat, right? Jesus told him to beware of the leaven of the Pharisees in Matthew 16. And they began to discuss among themselves, well, it's because we forgot to bring bread. Jesus then said, that's it. You're too dull. I'm going to get different followers, right? Time and time again, they would argue about who was the greatest. And so Jesus said to himself, man, if they argue about that one more time, I'm just going to fry the lot of them, right? No. And we look at example after example. So unlike many, Jesus never freaked out or blew up because of the failure of his followers. A great leader is one who expects it and is patient. Number five, Jesus prepared his followers for the difficult times ahead. He didn't dress up or withhold the truth. He was honest with them. Now, how do you feel when you discover that someone purposefully left out some unsavory information? Like maybe something you bought on eBay or Craigslist. How do you feel? Well, grab a Bible, if you would. Let's turn over to Matthew chapter 10. Now, this is when Jesus was sending them out on what we call the limited commission. Notice how blunt he was. Matthew chapter 10, verses 16 through 22. Behold, I send you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. So be shrewd as serpents and innocent as doves. But beware of men, for they will hand you over to the courts and scourge you in their synagogues, and you will even be brought before governors and kings for my sake, as a testimony to them and to the Gentiles. But when they hand you over, do not worry about how or what you are to say, for it will be given you in that hour what you are to say. For it is not you who speak, but it is the Spirit of your Father who speaks in you. Brother will betray brother to death, and a father his child. And children will rise up against parents and cause them to be put to death. You will be hated by all because of my name. It is the one who has endured to the end who will be saved. And he went on. And we find passages like Matthew 16, 21. From that time, Jesus began to show his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things from the elders and chief priests and scribes and be killed and be raised up on the third day. And of course, we know Peter's response to that. Some will say whatever it takes to keep their followers or to keep their followers happy. But Jesus told them the truth, and that they must count the cost. A great leader will prepare his followers for the difficult times ahead. Number six, Jesus was not afraid to rebuke his followers when needed. Some leaders, they're too afraid that they're going to lose their followers if they do. But like with children, you're not helping them if you don't discipline and correct them from time to time. Now, I'm sure there's some occasions when Jesus was chastening his followers that come to your mind. We find that the main rebuke that came from Jesus to his followers was, ye of little faith. Now, another example is in Luke 9, and that was when James and John, they asked if they should pray to call down fire from heaven on the Samaritans. And Jesus, he said, you do not know what kind of spirit you are of. For the Son of Man did not come to destroy men's lives, but to save them. See, a great leader is one who is not afraid to rebuke his followers when they need it. Number seven, Jesus complimented his followers. You see, some leaders go to the extreme And they only beat them up. And it may be because they're afraid of looking weak or something like that. And we've talked about the possible problems that can come from looking for and receiving praise. But praise is very important. Okay, there is a place for praise. We are to give honor where honor is due, Romans 13:7. Affirming people can often bring out the best in them. I mean, that's why they say it's important to fairly regularly be giving praise to your spouse and children. And we find Jesus telling them, "Blessed are your eyes because they see, and your ears because they hear. And blessed are you, Simon Bar-Jonah, because flesh and blood do not reveal this to you, but my Father who is in heaven." And when the 70 returned with joy and told him the results, he began by saying, "I was watching Satan fall from heaven like lightning." So he's letting them know that their work made a difference. Praise can cause a person to want to keep up the good work, but even do better. You know, when someone says to me, "Ty, you did a good job in that," man, I sure don't want to let them down the next time. A great leader is one who compliments his followers. Number 8, Jesus communicated on a level his followers could understand. Now, I'm sure you've seen this. Some leaders try to use big words and concepts just to wow their followers. But that's not helping them. It's not teaching them or bringing them forward. It's really just, "Look at me." Now, admittedly, Jesus did say some things from time to time that are very difficult to wrap one's mind around. And that should be expected. And there were times that he had to stop and spell it out plainly. But there are plenty of examples when Jesus communicated on a level that people could understand and just really grab hold of. Let me show you some examples from the Sermon on the Mount. And you'll remember these. Matthew 5:14-16. "You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do men light a lamp and put it under the peck measure, but on the lampstand. And it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven." It's very easy to picture and understand. Matthew 6:26. "Look at the birds of the air. They do not sow, neither do they reap, nor gather into barns. And yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not worth much more than they?" Matthew 7:3. "Why do you look at the speck that is in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that is in your own eye?" Matthew 7:24. "Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and acts upon them may be compared to a wise man who built his house upon the rock." He even used humor from time to time. For example, I've heard that in some countries, when you read about the log in the eye, they'll just die laughing. We've just heard it so many times to think it's funny. A great leader is one who tries to communicate on a level his followers can understand. Number 9, Jesus allowed his followers to rest. And this is important for a secular boss, a parent, a teacher, a Little Prairie Bible Camp director, any of those. You see, God gave the Israelites a day of rest for a reason. My dad tried to make me a fisherman. Oh, he pushed so hard, and he made me fish for so long when I was cold, and I was tired, and I was hungry, that I pretty much gave up on fishing altogether. He admits it. You can burn your followers out, and then they're probably going to leave you. Now, take a look at the example in Mark 6 with Jesus. "And the apostles gathered together with Jesus, and they reported to him all that they had done and taught. And he said to them, 'Come away by yourselves to a lonely place and rest a while.' For there were many people coming and going, and they did not even have time to eat. And they went away in a boat to a lonely place by themselves." Too much is obviously no good. But a great leader is one who allows his followers to rest. Number 10, Jesus was not intimidated by opposition. Now, when you are a leader, there is always going to be opposition, no matter what you do. What matters is how you react to it. Did Jesus ever let the opposition sway or deter him. I mean, Jesus did what was right no matter what, no matter who. And there are many examples of this. Let's turn over to Luke chapter 6. This is one of the occasions where it was on the Sabbath in a synagogue. Luke 6, let's read 6 through 11. On another Sabbath, he entered the synagogue and was teaching. And there was a man there whose right hand was withered. The scribes and the Pharisees were watching him closely to see if he healed on the Sabbath so that they might find reason to accuse him. But he knew what they were thinking. And he said to the man with the withered hand, "Get up and come forward." And he got up and came forward. And Jesus said to them, "I ask you, is it lawful to do good or to do harm on the Sabbath, to save a life or to destroy it?" After looking around at them all, he said to him, "Stretch out your hand." And he did so, and his hand was restored. But they themselves were filled with rage and discussed together what they might do to Jesus. You won't be much of a leader if you are. A great leader is one who is not intimidated by the opposition. So, how did Jesus deal with being a leader? He didn't lead for the praise. He brought his followers along with him. He built a vision for his followers. He was not demoralized by the failure of his followers. He prepared his followers for the difficult times ahead. He was not afraid to rebuke his followers when needed. He complimented his followers. He communicated on a level his followers could understand. He allowed his followers to rest, and he was not intimidated by opposition. When people look at you and me, do they see Jesus? It is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me.